Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd of ESPN.com. Dave, Season 3, Lucky Episode 13. What number does Peyton Manning wear?
18, right?
13, right? It would be Unlucky Episode 18. But I'll tell you, I don't know. There's some people who have said this is the biggest, he is the biggest story in terms of personnel moves in NFL history. And I thought back, and I'm not sure I can come up with something bigger. Peyton Manning starting over in Denver is about as biggest offseason of story as we've ever had, and it starts Sunday night.
I don't know. Does Joe Montana go into the Chiefs? That was pretty cataclysmic, I thought, back in the day.
Yep, that's a good one.
Of course, we don't have we didn't have Twitter and all like that. I remember how sad I was when Franco Harris signed with the Seahawks.
And Brett Favre going to the Vikings had to be right there, because that was, that had a little bit more of a rivalry aspect as well.
Yeah, there's been some big ones. Manning's front and center right now because he's it's new and it's fresh on our mind. And it's no reason, it's no wonder why he is the story this week, of course.
A little footnote to NFL history yesterday with Art Modell passing. There's Cleveland, obviously the Steelers' rival for so long, and the Maras and the Modells and the Rooneys, families that were known for their teams. The guy did a lot of great things for the NFL, including kind of pushing toward Monday Night Football. But like it or not, the first line in his obituary is going to be taking the Browns out of Cleveland and moving them to Baltimore. And there may be a moment of silence in a lot of cities around the NFL this weekend for honoring Art Modell for what he did for the league, but there won't be one in Cleveland.
Yeah. Have you seen some of the comments that are coming at it? They are already, boy, burning hell. And they are brutal on the guy, but the guy did do a lot as far as broadcasting, getting the TV deals and stuff done early in the early days of the NFL. He did a lot of good for the league, and he never was one of my favorite guys, obviously, because of the team that he owned, and you don't know a lot about that as a child growing up. All you see are the team colors. But the NFL lost a big part of their history there. And as you said, one of the top lines in his obituary was how he ripped Cleveland of their team.
So Dave, here we go. Week one. I mean, this is, it seems a long time in coming. It's the longest off season in sports, and it's been February since a real game was played. Obviously the season opened Wednesday night with the Cowboy win over the Giants. Let's just touch on that for a second. A nice game for Tony Romo on the big stage. I mean, Eli was fine. Victor Cruz didn't help him much with the drops. Looked like the Giants front seven tired a bit in the second half, really couldn't get the stop they needed. And, I think it's actually good for the league. Dallas won a big game because they haven't been on the big stage and won a big game in a while. So your thoughts on what happened?
Yeah, I was worried. I thought it was going to be another Romo kind of meltdown on that interception early in the game. Yep. Game there. I thought, okay, here we go. How big was that horse collar tackle now?
It's one of those things that, you look at games and you see penalties called and it's the right call, and they made the right call. But the guy, the horse tackle, he probably can't make that tackle one-handed unless he makes that tackle the way he did. And then they stuff him, they stuff him and hold him to a field goal. And you're right. They talk about penalties worth taking. Well, that was one.
Yeah, and isn't a horse collar a finable, you know, it's been fined before, so.
And I think they're really trying to crack, you know, they always talk about what they're cracking down on in the league, but that was a, so it was a quote-unquote point of emphasis I saw recently this year. So it'll be interesting to see if that gets the appropriate fine. That's a good point. I think it probably will now that you've reminded me of that.
But then again, it did. It was a big play in the game, and it saved the touchdown there. So I
pay $15,000 for a win. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I think Jerry Jones will make sure that kind of gets kind of taken care of in one way or another without being a salary cap violation there of some sorts. But yeah, you know, the game started off slow. I thought the second half was much more interesting. I thought Romo made some key passes. Boy, what a clutch throw on that final throw of his of the game there to on third down. You know, they very easily could have just been conservative there and, you know, just went ahead and, you know, ran a running play and not converted the first down, then have to punt. Then you put the ball back in the hands of Eli Manning for one last time. But, yeah, I thought Romo played good after a rough start there. And hey, you know, let's not put the Cowboys in the Super Bowl yet, and let's not throw dirt on the world champion New York Giants either.
Yeah, look, it's one game, so it is one game. We get kicked off here Sunday, and we'll get into all the games. We'll make our picks as always for all the games, and we'll close up with the Steeler game. But let's take a look first at what happened yesterday at practice. Some more interesting news and. None of it particularly good in terms of what came out yesterday, but I guess there's some nuances in there as well. So why don't you take us through the injury report?
Well, you know, James Harrison did not work yesterday after being limited on Wednesday and being limited on Monday. That's never a good sign on a Thursday to not practice there. Now, Jim Wexel evidently had some sort of, I don't know if it was a formal Q&A or not, it didn't read like it was a formal Q&A, and after all, James Harrison had put signs evidently on his locker saying, I'm not talking to Friday. But regardless, the Q&A that Wexel did with Harrison, you know, it sounds like that knee is causing him some pain. And although it hasn't blown up like a balloon, it doesn't sound like he's ready. And, you know, Harrison posted last night on Twitter that he, you know, intends on practicing today and that he'll know his status, official status, later today. Well, yeah, because, I mean, you have to put a classification as far as questionable, doubtful, or probable on the injury report today. And, you know, maybe he does work and maybe he does get the questionable tag. But I've got to be honest with you, David, I see no reason whatsoever to suit this guy up, you know, for this game Sunday night. I mean, the guy, let's say he does go limited today. In practice, that's three limited participations in practice dating back to the first OTA session. So, I mean, I know this is James Harrison we're talking about. My hat's off to him to want to get in and play in this game, the competitor in him and all like that. But this is one game of 16, and I think you can, you know, what are you actually going to get on the field with James Harrison here? Obviously, he's not going to play all 60 snaps. If he does play, are we talking 15 to 20 snaps? And how effective can he be during those snaps that you probably couldn't get out of Chris Carter anyway? So, you know, that's what we'll be watching for later today around noon, I guess, is when.
Yeah, let me just throw my two cents in there to play a little. Jerry Dulek has been singing that kind of song for a while and saying, James Harrison, you know, if he's down for this game and he has problems, he's going to be out for a really long time. Now, you know, just like the rest of us, Jerry makes his money talking about the sport, and he says some outrageous things. He said a bunch of them in the preseason. I don't know. I mean, I think the answer is I'm with you on this part. If he's limited Friday, then I don't see him going Sunday. And I think that's as simple as Mike Tomlin saying, I haven't seen a full practice out of you. I can't have you go. I can't have you go in a game on Sunday night. So I think he's got to be able to go fully on Friday. Now, Mark Cabale, another beat writer covering the team, a friend of the show, he said, look, if he can go Friday and he can go fully, he's going to go Sunday. Now, I don't know enough, and we knew his timing was going to be right around this game. So I kind of think what Jerry Dulek said is probably a little bit off point, unless he has another setback in the sense that not a setback, oh, he's working the knee and he has some swelling. Look, he hasn't done a lot of work. He had a procedure. So there's going to be some rust and some swelling. So I'm fine with that. I don't think we're talking about a long-term injury. And we'll get into the signing the Steelers did and possibly the DeCastro move that goes with that. And I think maybe that's related. So I'm with you on the limited practice stuff. If he's full bore Friday and can go and comes back on Saturday when they fly and he's moving okay, then I don't have a problem. But I still think your point holds that he's going to play 20 to 30 snaps. And, you know, maybe it turns out he's ineffective in the game, or maybe it turns out that once or twice he can get to Peyton Manning and it makes a difference. That's just one of the things. We'll see how the performance goes. But I'm with you that Mike Tomlin's not going to put him out there if he's not good to go.
Yeah, and you know, put a percent on that, I think, too. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the guy has not taken a football snap in a game since the wild card game. And, you know, I know it's old hat to him. A lot of players don't need practice or whatnot, but we're talking about a guy with a knee. And Joe Harrison even said himself over the previous past week or two, I believe he said that he needs some work before playing in a game. So,
we got the same situation with Jason Worlds as well. He hasn't played in a game either. Now he's getting some more reps in practice, but like we said, he's only had three practices now. He's been able to, you know, have a full go. I don't know how hard they're going in the practices. He obviously hasn't had, I'm sure there's contact, but I'm sure they're not in full pads. So, you know, they're going to be running, and Chris Carter has said he'll get the start if it's not Harrison. So Worlds will be maybe the backup to the backup, and maybe he doesn't see the field even at all if Harrison dresses. But it will be interesting to watch how the personnel shakes out at that position for sure.
Yeah, I'll just close with this. I just think regardless of what he does today in practice, I just say you sit James Harrison. It's a 16-game schedule. You know, give him another week to get acclimated a little bit more to the game. But anyway, the rest of the injury report, remember me talking about Baron Batch tugging that groin night in the Panthers game?
On point, yep.
He didn't, Tomlin didn't mention him after the game, and then it wasn't until Wednesday that he showed up on the injury report as limited with that groin. Well, lo and behold, now he didn't practice on Thursday with that groin. And
you wonder if Baron maybe kind of misdiagnosed himself on Monday when they had practice and didn't go in and do the appropriate things to get, because he wasn't on the injury. Well, there wasn't a full injury report Monday, but he wasn't spoken about on Tuesday, right?
That's correct. And maybe he was trying to hide that. But he did pull himself out of that game, though, in the Panthers preseason game, and did not return. So they had to know. And it's evident that he's tugging on it when he's coming off the side of the field there. And that's what alerted me to it. But regardless, you know how Tomlin is with these young kids. I mean, if they don't go Thursday and Friday, then they're likely to be down. So you have to think.
So Rashard Mendenhall maybe gets a hat week one. I'm waiting for you to kowtow at the altar of my oracle of predicting Rashard.
I will say that if he is down, and this is a big loss, not just because he's a running back, more so because he's plays on all the special teams units.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, we were not expecting Baron Batch to get a carry in this game. Maybe he gets a dump-off pass or two in a third-down situation, but in my opinion, that was going to be it. But I think there is a good chance that Rashard Mendenhall, because of the numbers on the inactive list alone,
yep.
I think there's a good chance that Rashard Mendenhall dresses for this game. A, let me just say this. What do you have to lose to dress Mendenhall and run him out there for warm-ups with the normal warm-ups for the team to get him conditioned to do that initially?
No, yeah, nothing. I agree with you. I mean, I think it's probably either or now at this point, Batch or Mendenhall, assuming everybody else is coming through practice like we think.
I think there's a good chance. And then why not leave him dressed at that point? Because the guy is evident. Now, here's the thing. On Friday, evidently, Mendenhall is listed as going through a full participation in practice. But in, kind of him sideline talking to some reporters, it was like, well, nah, not really. So I don't know what to take from that. Tunch Okun even said that on the Steelers Live at 4 show yesterday. So, and I think I read Wexel had a little bit on that as well too. But he's evidently back cutting. But my thing is, if he's going to be active, leave him dressed, because Isaac Redman practiced fully with his ankle on Thursday. He, it looks like he's going to go again on Friday by our reports. You're going to have Jonathan Dwyer healthy. You're going to have, of course, Chris Rainey there. Why not just leave Mendenhall dressed in a break glass in case of emergency situation there, being as you have to have another 7 on the inactive list anyway. I think there's a very good chance that he is active, and I would have never, ever, ever have dreamed that Rashard Mendenhall would have been active, let alone off of the PUP list just several weeks ago. Let me round this out too. Brett Kiesel, ankle, practice fully. Jason Worlds, wrist, practice fully. Larry Foote returned after having Wednesday off with the ankle. He practiced fully. Of course, David DeCastro with his knee and Stevenson Sylvester with his knee. They've long been ruled out for this game. Ryan Clark's on the injury report just because of his illness. He's been practicing fully on the scout team because of his sickle cell trait. For the Broncos, one injury to note, Chris Cooper broke his forearm, a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, he's going to be sidelined for this game, but the Broncos are very, very healthy.
Right. Chris Cooper is the one guy at guard that they're, as we learned, Manny Ramirez will be taking his place. He's going to fly in from the Dodger game on Sunday or the A's game, I guess. Where is Manny?
I don't even know
where Manny is right now.
I think Manny knows where Manny is. I think they released him.
So Dave, let's get into a little bit of news yesterday that broke last night. There was a report that, quote unquote, super agent Drew Rosenhaus was in the Steeler parking lot, and we can tie, the line looks like it is one dot to the other. The Steelers then yesterday evening announced that they had signed defensive back DeMarcus Van Dyke. Tell us a little bit about this guy.
Yeah, Dave, DeMarcus Van Dyke, a former third-round pick, actually last year, of the Oakland Raiders that they've given up on already. This is a kid at the combine that blazed a 4.28. Somewhere in that neighborhood. That's what they're toting around as a number right now in the 40-yard dash. Kid out of University of Miami. A lot of people said the Raiders, reach for this kid a couple of rounds early. It's classic signature Al Davis type of draft pick, going for the speed only.
Yep.
Type thing.
Yep.
But here's the backstory on him a little bit. You have to remember that the kid had no offseason last year program because of the lockout and all. His defensive backs coach was Rod Woodson. So keep that in mind here when you're going through the process in here. He ended up playing in 14 games as a rookie, and he started 4 of those games. He recorded 13 tackles, 1 interception, and defensed 4 passes in roughly about 329 snaps of work on defense. He did allow 2 touchdowns he was thrown at 30 times and allowed 2 touchdowns, but he only allowed 13 receptions in total on 30 targets. When you go back and watch the film on this guy, especially his combine workout, he gets his hips turned, but he's out of control. That's one thing that stuck out to me, is he can flip his hips, but he flips them and he's out of control when he does that. That showed up on film as well too. Most recently in the game against the Arizona Cardinals this preseason, where he gave up 2 big catches. One of those catches, though, he was in good position. He just mistimed his leap. Also, the kid came out of Miami weighing a 170 something. So that's the equivalent to being Calista Flockhart in the NFL. That's a bit wafy, if you get what I'm saying there. Since that time, though, he has, I heard in one of the broadcasts this preseason, that he is up to a 185 now. And he's just short of 6'1". So he's got some length to him. He definitely has the speed. Has some of the measurables there. I think he needs to eat a couple of steaks. His tackling, boy, remember how Deion Sanders used to tackle with that shoulder, David?
Yeah, well, or not tackle with that
shoulder. Right, or the lack of tackling. It looks like he went to the Deion Sanders school of tackling. He does not wrap up good at all. He always tries.
Ducks his head and doesn't use his arms.
Exactly. That's classic good analogy right there, or description of what he does on film. In the game against the Arizona Cardinals, one play after him giving up one of those big plays there, the running back bounces it, and we're talking like a fourth-string running back here late in the game. Running back starts inside, bounces it outside, and Van Dyke is kind of, you know, got caught inside there, makes a flailing attempt at a tackle, of course misses, and the running back goes in from whatever it was, 12 or 13 yards out. In short, this is a kid that's going to be a project, and, you know, I'm surprised, though. I mean, it looked like he was slated to make the Raiders 53-man roster this year, and I think it surprised, from what I was reading, it surprised several Raiders fans that they would give up on this kid so quickly, considering they had a third-round pick invested in him. But the Raiders did clean house this past offseason. Rod Woodson's no longer there. And you know, when you think about, you know, why, A, he, you know, people are saying, why did he clear waivers and all like that? This guy had to be added to the 53-man roster of the team that claimed him, because he does not have any practice squad eligibility left.
And that's the important thing, because, as you said, 14 games last year.
Exactly, 14 games. So that put him out of eligibility there. So any team that would have claimed him last week off of waivers would have had to put him on the 53. Not many teams were, you know, at this point in the season are willing to do that. They have their 53-man roster set heading into game week one. The Steelers so happened to, I guess, you know, saw enough in him. Who knows if Rod Woodson or Carnell Lake talked about this? I think that's, you know, you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together, looking for clues, and, you know, maybe one called the other and say, hey, take a look at this kid. I think, needless to say, this is a kid that's, you know, hopefully does not have to contribute on defense this year. He might be outside, out the door as quick as he got here. We'll see, but he's going to have to.
Important to remember, because of that practice squad eligibility, this could be a, you know, this could be a short stay. They're going to find some things out, not probably not today, but next week in practice and in the next 2 weeks, that it could be a short stay.
Yeah, and I think with Baron Batch possibly being down this week, I think this kid, you know, has a shot at dressing this week and contributing as a gunner, you know, on special teams or working on the kickoff team. But make no mistake, before they do anything with this kid, you know, they're going to have to get his confidence back. He's got a lot of technical flaws, because, you know, he just thrown right into the fire with the Raiders. I think it was game five. He's making his first start there. So, you know, the jury's going to be out with him. Can this be another Keenan Lewis type situation with Carnell Lake? Who knows? But, you know, let's not get our hopes up on him. And as you said, he could be out, you know, he could be back off the roster as soon as Monday or Tuesday. But I'm willing to bet Carnell Lake spends a good week with him to see what there is to work with. The Steelers were definitely in the market for a defensive back, it seems, at least for this week, because they brought in free agents Terrence Johnson, Dominique Franks, Akwasa, people know who I'm talking about. Man, yep. I think this is a conspiracy sometimes. The Pundusens and the, good God, a guy like me, a Southern boy with a high school education, trying to pronounce some of these names. The kid who used to play for Dallas, how's that?
They
brought him in for a free agent look, but they ended up signing Van Dyke instead, so stay tuned.
Yeah, no, it's just definitely interesting stuff, and the three guys they brought in earlier in the week portended a signing. It turns out they signed a completely different guy. I'm still interested to see, and nobody's, you know, given us the corresponding roster move. This move has been made because they're not allowed to have 54 guys on the roster, so it hasn't been announced. The obvious move is David DeCastro to the IR, and so, you know, the good thing is, this guy is not the kid they signed is not a vested veteran. His salary is not necessarily going to be guaranteed, so they don't have the issues that we were talking about with Trey Essex or Charlie Batch or any of those. They don't come into play here, so it's not going to cost the Steelers a lot of money necessarily. So I would think the move will be DeCastro here, although you just, you know, as I said, you just wonder. It would give me a little comfort about James Harrison's situation if they put DeCastro on the IR. They don't think that James Harrison is a guy who is a candidate to maybe supersede DeCastro on that list. So, you know, there'll be a small comfort if I see DeCastro as the guy that, okay, Harrison, even if he can't go this week or even if he can't go next week, it's not something that's going to keep him out 6 to 8 weeks. So that'll be a small silver lining if that's the move they finally make with DeCastro.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm willing to bet, and I wrote last night that, you know, DeCastro would be the only one, in my opinion, unless you're going to cut Baron Batch, waive him injured, would probably be the only other name I could see.
I mean, I guess, you know, it sounds like Golden's healthy, so it could be a one for one, and you keep your fingers crossed that Golden slides through here on a Friday, which, you know, he very well could. So I you know, that would be the other guy. One of those two, I think, would be the two guys, who, you know, maybe even Adrian Robinson, but, you know, less likely just because of positional value maybe. But, yeah, I mean, those are the candidates to go.
Yeah, and I think there's a shot that Golden could be by, the, you know, Monday or Tuesday anyway, because of no need to carry five safeties on the roster after, you know, with Ryan Clark coming back. I think there's a good shot that Golden could get released on Monday and Tuesday and then signed to the practice squad anyway. But, you know, we'll have to see how that goes there. But
and as we've said all along, look.
Absolutely.
This is a roster inflow. The fringes of the roster are going to be in flux for a while here.
Yeah, we haven't even made week one, you know, the first game yet, and we're already seeing roster moves. So, as you stated, it's going to be a real fluid for the first several weeks until this thing calms down a little bit.
All right, Dave, we're deep into it, so it's time to get into our analysis of this game against the Broncos. Steelers-Broncos, Peyton's debut in Denver. The obvious first question is going to be, you know, what kind of offense is Denver going to run? Are they going to come out and basically run Indianapolis's offense that Peyton ran? And look, they've got some of the components in there with Tammy and Stokely, and they are going to be Peyton friendly. We're going to look at the offense that they ran last year. I think somebody called it the Fred Flintstone offense that they ran with Tebow. That's gone. I think the idea that Denver was the best running team in the league last year, yes, that's factually correct. But I think that's kind of now we can look at that very differently. let's assume, pardon me, Denver's going to come out with this Indianapolis type offense. What do you expect the Steelers to do to counteract it defensively?
Well, I do see them doing, you know, one thing that stuck out in preseason, of course it was preseason, they do like to run three wides a lot in their personnel groupings, and they do like to put the Eric Decker kid in the slot, who, by the way, I think Eric Decker's going to have a huge year this year. I think he's, and I'm not just saying everybody wants to compare white wide receivers to Wes Welker, this is an obvious comparison here because he reminds you a lot of Wes Welker, but anyway, I think what they're going to do, you know, this is a Peyton Manning type offense. They're going to try to single up Decker or a running back out of the backfield on some of the linebackers. Peyton loves to get his mismatches, and that's what he looks for when he steps to the line of scrimmage. He likes to take advantage of the mismatches. I think he'll look for the single coverage outside at times with Demaryius Thomas possibly on Ike Taylor. And Peyton's not a guy that likes to throw the deep ball anymore. I mean, he can still throw it, but, you know, it's not one of his strengths anymore. The underneath stuff, you know, David, with the great quarterbacks over the last few years that the Steelers have struggled with, they've been the quarterbacks, the Drew Brees, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's, who are very patient, that take things that are given them and not afraid to do that, to march the ball down the field instead of forcing the football. I could see a lot of underneath stuff to the right, to Peyton's right side underneath Keenan Lewis there. But, you know, and make no mistake, though, they are going to try to, I believe, run first, particularly at the Steelers' right side of their defensive line, to test either James Harrison or Chris Carter, whoever's over there, to set up the run. So this will be, you will see a lot of the Indianapolis offense here, the offense that Peyton ran there. You're going to see elements of that. I'm not sure how good McGahee is at running that stretch play.
Right, and that'll be an interesting thing, because I think how they use their running backs will be telling. We know they're going to use some fullback. But, you know, they get this kid, Ronnie Hillman, who we may see a little bit of him. I don't know how much Noshon's going to play, but I think you might see a little bit of Ronnie Hillman as well.
Yeah, and they're not afraid to use the fullback either, that Lance Ball kid. We saw Will Router, too, in film study there during the preseason. Peyton is not afraid to go all over the place, but he really likes the kid Eric Decker there. I mean, this is the kid that scares me the most in this game, that could be a guy that has eight catches, 100 yards, two touchdowns type situation there. Tammy, of course, worked with him in Indianapolis there. He's got Stokely there, who he knows exactly where he's going to be on the football field at all times. So look for, you know, a short a deliberate passing attack mixed in with the run. The Steelers are going to have to get, you know, you hear every week, got to get pressure on the quarterback. You got to knock him down. It's obvious with Peyton, this is exactly what you have to do, and not necessarily on the edges either, because Peyton is very good at stepping up into a pocket to deliver a throw. And he gets the ball out quick, too. He's not one that holds on to it.
I mean, that's the thing. And we look, when the Steelers had success against Peyton when he was in Indianapolis, and particularly in that playoff game, it's because they were getting pressure on him, as you said, not just on the edge, up the middle. Peyton is a guy, and I'll tell you this, Tom Brady is a guy, too. They have shown that if you hit him a bunch of times, their performance deteriorates. I mean, look, it's true basically of every quarterback, but there are some guys who maybe stand in there a little bit better. What Tom Brady and Peyton Manning do, they both stand in there like champs, but Peyton gets rid of that ball awfully fast. And it showed in that playoff game. You hit him a few times, then he's looking for where the pressure's coming from, and that's a key. And I don't expect what I'm interested to see, Dave, is how the Steelers try to man up on the outside. Is Ike Taylor going to take Demaryius Thomas, or is he going to take Decker? Maybe that matchup with Decker is maybe Keenan Lewis can run with Demaryius Thomas, and they decide that they maybe want to flip how they do their corner coverage. So that'll be the first thing I look at. And then the second thing I want to see is, you know, whether they're playing any press coverage or they're playing, you know, given that 7-yard cushion off the line of scrimmage. I don't know. I assume that's probably how they're going to come out, but I'm hoping they mix it up a little bit on him, and so they're not just giving up quick slants that you talked about. That, you know, look to Peyton looking to his left and hitting Decker on quick slants. Now, of course, you can counteract that by dropping the linebackers into those slots and do some other things. But that's the first thing I'm going to be keying on.
Yeah, and the use of the zone blitz and the fire X, I think you've got to somehow get pressure up the middle. Let's face it, the interior of the Broncos line really is not great. But, you know, Peyton can make bad offensive lines look good just by the sheer fact that he gets rid of the ball so quickly. And their line is built more – they're a run-blocking line, in my opinion, when you look at them on tape. Now, Clady's good over there at left tackle. But outside of that, you know, without Chris Kuiper, Cooper in there, you know, they're missing some integral parts. I think Lamar Woodley's going to have a good game on his side over there against the right tackle to get pressure there. But I, you know, as far as the coverage goes, I expect them to mix it up quite a bit. I think Ike Taylor does start off on Demaryius Thomas. Decker lines up in the slot there, so. You know, you see a lot of Cortez Allen, I think, and I would like to see Cortez press him too, because that's the reason Decker lines up in the slot, is so he can get a free release in there. So, you know, I think putting Cortez Allen in there and having him trail him most of the game, expect a lot of nickel from the Steelers in this game. I don't expect a lot of base. I think there could be some dime. Hey, we saw the dime during preseason, and that's kind of unusual for Dick LeBeau to roll that out there in the preseason. So, you know, maybe they're looking at you know, maybe getting foot off the field at some times during this game and going with some dime. But
and foot off the field, and I don't expect Casey to be in there for a lot of snaps, 10 to 15 tops, and that may mean McClendon doesn't see the field a lot. So it would also be interesting to see what they're using up front if they have three guys up front of maybe it's McClendon, Kiesel, and Ziggy, but, you know, you're going to see Cam Hayward in there, and maybe you're going to see two linemen. You may see situations where there are only two linemen.
Yeah, definitely in the nickel, that's for sure, because, you know, that's when they pull out the nose tackle there. So, you know, as far as Casey Hampton and McClendon goes, hey, Casey Hampton's going to get this start. But don't read too much into that, because, I mean, let's face it, how many times are the Steelers going to be in their base 3-4 in this game? 20?
Yeah.
Right. You know, so, you know, you figure 10 snaps, 10, 12 snaps for Casey. Where McClendon's other snaps are going to come is in the nickel as part of that rotation there. I do not expect Casey Hampton to play any in the nickel there, but McClendon is a guy that you can use in your rotation of players there to play the play the inside defensive tackle spot in the nickel situation there. So when you see the chart on this, the participation chart after we get it up after the game, you should see McClendon with twice the amount of snaps, I believe, over Hampton.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, and he probably isn't going to get more than 25 snaps himself. So that's probably, you know, between the two of them, they're probably not going to be on the field very often together, if at all. So between the two of them, we're looking probably 30 snaps I would think 30, 35 snaps total.
I would agree with that. I would say 10 with Hampton and about 20 possibly at most for McClendon.
Yep. Okay, Dave, so that's, you know, so Denver's going to come out. Do we expect them to try to run the ball against the Steelers? Do we think they think they're going to be effective running the ball against the interior of the Steeler line?
I think they will try. I think they're going to start to – I think they're going to run to try to set up the pass. I really do. And I think, as I said, I think the Denver's going to run to their left, the Steelers' right. They, you know, they want to try to catch Chris Carter. You know, if he starts, they want to kind of catch him peeking inside there, slow down. I mean, let's face it, Chris Carter, in the preseason, as far as a pass rusher go, he relies on his speed and around the edge, and there's no better – defense to that to slow a pass rusher down than to run directly at him. So I think that's what they're going to do. I don't think Peyton wants to throw the ball 35 times in this game. I really think they want to bounce here, and I think they open up trying to run, as I said, to their left and up the middle here and attack the interior of the Steelers' defense and make those safeties come up.
Okay, let's flip it around the other side of the ball. We've got offensively for the Steelers. This is a team where I think over the course of the season, this whole idea that the Steelers are going to, you know, try to really balance the run and the pass, I think that's probably a bit of a fallacy. I think you're going to see the Steelers be a passing team. Ben is the best player on the team. He's the biggest weapon they have. They got great weapons at the wide receiver and tight end position. They've got Chris Rainey's a weapon out of the backfield. So having said all that, that, you know, I think Todd Haley recognizes that, and I don't think that, you know, they'll run the ball to close out games. I do expect them to run the ball to start this game because Denver's defense, their weakness, when we heard this with Cecil Lammy on Wednesday, the weakness of their team is that interior defensive line and maybe middle linebacker position. So I expect them to look to go to behind Pouncey and Cologne early in this game.
I couldn't have said it better, David. And all off season, you remember me saying with this new offense that I think the first two to three games at least of this season is going to be heavy run, because as they get kind of get this acclimated to this offense, a little bit more. You got some people like Mike Wallace that are still trying to play catch up here, moving into this week. This line initially, I think, and here's the thing too, you need to keep to win this game. You got to keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hand. And you have to win the time of possession, nice, slow, deliberate drives that end in 7 points, I think is the game plan here. And I think you run early. Let's face it. I mean, I don't know about you, but Max Starks in that last, and I love Max Starks. I'm a proponent of bringing this guy back all off season, considering the situation that they had. Elvis Dumervil was working him over pretty good in that AFC wildcard game, in my opinion there. So I think to slow him down, in addition, much as I talked about the Broncos slowing down Chris Carter on the edge there, you run right at him as best as you can. Now, unfortunately, DeCastro's down and going to be down for a while, so you're not going to be able to run that trap to that side there a lot with Ramon Foster there, because he just does not get it out of the starting blocks quick enough to pull that off 10 times a game. But you will be able to run behind Max Starks and run behind Willie Colon on that side, I believe. And I'm with you. I think they run early in this game, trying to set the physical tone that way, try to start wearing down that defense, slow down the pass rush. And I think, I think the game plan is to run more total over pass in this game as far as balance goes. Now, of course, late in the game, if they're behind and have to pass, that's going to skew the numbers. But, I'm with you. This is going to be a run-first game, in my opinion, for the Steelers.
So the way I was thinking about it last night, I did a segment with 93.7 in Denver, is, I think you're going to see the Steelers come out and play the Peyton Manning offense. I think they want, really, this is the game, as much as any game that we're going to see here early in the season. Denver's got two guys on the edge, and Dumervil and Von Miller, who can really get after him. It's not a great matchup for the Steelers with Max Starks and Marcus Gilbert on the sides. There's probably going to be less pressure up front. But you are going to see Ben getting the ball out of his hands, I think, today, Sunday night. I think So we'll see some of that. You'll see the screens that they worked on. You'll see the checkdowns that we saw all through camp in Latrobe and in these preseason games. Ben's going to make his first read and get the ball out of his hands. So, you know, people make fun of dink and dunk offense, but do not be surprised if early. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to take a shot now and then. And it wouldn't surprise me if even in the first or second series they go deep to Mike Wallace just to, you know, get that in Denver's head as well. But when we talk about a dink and dunk offense, you may see some of that in the first half, a little bit more of that than we're used to seeing, just to get the tempo set and to keep Doomerville and Von Miller from pinning their ears back. And, of course, Derek Wolfe, the second-round pick out of Cincinnati, who everybody's loved through preseason out there.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. They will do that because, as you stated, they have to slow down the edge there. You know, it's still early, and Max Starks is still getting acclimated to that knee. I'm with you on all of it. A short, crisp passing game. If your first read, second read is not there, dump it off to your back there. You're going to see a lot of two tight end sets, personnel packages with the Steelers here, some max protection type things as well, too, keeping men in. They love to line up the fullback back there as well, too. Don't be surprised to see a wheel route or two by Will Johnson in this game as well, too, because this guy should be able to run free with a linebacker. A guy I wrote about yesterday, David, this guy has flown under the radar more so than he normally does during a preseason. Heath Miller, this is a guy, first words out of Todd Haley's mouth during his introductory press conference was Heath Miller's one of my favorite players. First player named by Todd Haley during that press conference, if memory serves me correctly. You look at the preseason, you see Heath Miller was only had two catches for 15 yards, was in on a lot of the two tight end sets, or he's in on every play, basically. I mean, when you look at the participation chart, when this game is done, you're only going to see Heath Miller hopefully miss about five snaps in this game. But look for them to use Heath Miller in this game, you know, with some mismatches on a linebacker or on a safety here along with the running backs. But come the end of the day, I don't expect 380 yards passing for Ben Roethlisberger. I think a good game for Roethlisberger to win this game is something like 220, 230 yards, two touchdown passes, and no interceptions there with the running backs catching about five or six balls in this game.
Yeah, and I think for us, the personnel thing that we're least sure about is who's going to be getting the carries at running back. I'm still guessing Isaac Redmond gets the start, but I think you and I both agree that it wouldn't surprise us if both he and Dwyer had 15 carries, splitting the workload there. And the third back who dresses is probably going to now depend on who's healthy in terms of bats. If he's healthy, he'll dress. If not, Mendenhall may dress. I don't expect him to see the field either way. I really just don't expect him to be out there. But Chris Rainey, again, we've talked about kind of the 5 to 7 touches. He may get to run the ball once or twice just to show that he can do it to keep the defense a little more honest. But he will be, I'm sure they will have a couple plays in the playbook designed to get him the ball as well.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think Redmond starts. But, hey, Dwyer has earned some carries in this game. There's no question about that. The kid's become a very, very complete back you know, over the last 2 years now, and we were worried about that with him heading into last season there. Redmond, you know, really hasn't looked crisp on that ankle, and although he's practiced fully, looks like he'll practice fully again today, we hope. I could see a split there. The key is who's going to be your third down back now? Is it going to be Rainey in there? Is it going to be Redmond? You know, if you don't have Batch, if Batch is down for this game, that takes him out of there, and I'm with you. I think the only way Mendenhall sees the field in here is if something disastrous really happens in this game. But, I could see a pretty even split as far as distribution between Redmond and Dwyer goes. And the hot hand stays in.
And, Dave, I think, you know, special teams probably a small edge for Denver in the talent level, the two specialists. We'll see how the Steelers' coverage units do. We know in the return game it's going to be Rainey, but Mike Tomlin keeps mentioning Sanders and Antonio Brown, so I wouldn't rule it out. I'd be a little surprised, but in a certain situation, I guess there's a chance we could see one or the other. But we expect to see Chris Rainey involved in those situations. And by the way, Matt Prater is going to kick every kickoff, you know, into the stands. So I'm guessing the Steelers, regardless of the score, have 0 yards on kick returns because he's a guy with a monster leg, and kicking in Denver, it's just not going to be an issue. But I'll be interested to see the Steelers coverage teams. Hopefully Sushi can be kicking them out of the end zone as well, and hopefully he gets to do it often. But we'll see how those coverage units do, because it's Amos Jones' first game, and it's a little bit of an unsettled unit here going into week one.
Yeah, and I'm with you, too. This is where the thin air, I think, actually benefits the Steelers in this game more than it does the Broncos. Heck, they're used to kicking it out of the end zone all the time. It'd be nice, because of the question marks the Steelers have in their special teams units right now, especially if Baron Batch is down for this game. It would be nice just to go ahead and kick the damn ball out of the end zone. That way, you know, they can't kill you. The ball's at the 20. Let's go. Let's play. The punt return coverage, the DeMarcus Van Dyke, look for him, you know, where he is on this field if Baron Batch is down for this game on special teams. You know, that 4-2 whatever speed, you know, that can get you, if you can get off the line on the punt as the gunner there, that can get you downfield in the face of a punt returner mighty, mighty quick, and, you know, maybe get you some fair catches or two as far as that goes. So, and as far as Rainey goes, you know, that, hey, he could bust this game open, you know, with taking one to the house. So I expect him to be the punt return man. Hopefully there's no block in the backs or holding or anything that we saw in that last preseason game there. But right now I would have to give the edge to the Broncos in the special teams category.
All right, Dave, time to make our picks. And we're going to keep better track of this year. We'll say that we've got our lines here, and we'll pick each game, but you can pass on two games a week. But we'll try and pick them all, and we'll try to keep better track.
Yeah, Alan Gifford, I know you're listening to this, so do us a favor, buddy, and keep a spreadsheet on this throughout the season for us, if you don't mind.
Yeah, we're going to have a very large cup of coffee and a couple of burritos wagered on who wins this, or some tacos. Dave, week one, first game on the slate. And one of the keys this week is we're going to see, I think, 10 first- or second-year quarterbacks getting starts this week. It'll be really interesting to see. I've got a different view on a lot of these guys. Chicago is home. They get the Indianapolis Colts in Andrew Luck's debut. Chicago land 10.
And if I can get 9.5, I'm going to be all over it. You know, let me lay the 10 here, if that's the number that you're going to force me to choose here. Chicago, I think Cutler is going to be too much for that Colts secondary. This is Andrew Luck's first game as a rookie on the road. Give me Chicago, lay the 10.
I'll lay the 10 as well. The second game on the slate, another rookie quarterback at the helm, at home this time. Brandon Whedon's at home against the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Eagles are favored by 9.
I don't see how you can't take that 9 right there. I mean, even on the road, I know that's a tough call on the road, but I think the Eagles' defense, just the pass rush is too strong. Give me the Eagles minus 9.
I'm with you. I think the defense in that game wins the game for the Eagles. They, you know, I don't see Cleveland putting up more than 13 points. Well, I'll be interested to watch Tony Richardson, though. And on the third game of the week, the Jets are at home, laying 3 to Buffalo. Buffalo seems to be everybody's darling in the kind of under-the-radar team that people like. The Jets at home, minus 3. As I've told you, I am against the Jets all year. I'm under 8.5 wins. But this game here in this week, in week one, I'm going to say that the Jets win this game, laying the 3. I think it'll be a close game, but I'm going to take the favorite here to be a little contrarian.
I am too, and not to be contrarian, just for the sheer fact, I think Stevie Johnson has a little bit of a groin issue.
Yep.
Boy, I sure do talk about other men's groins a lot, don't I?
Yeah. Yes, you do.
If I can get 2.5 on this, I really love it. But otherwise, you know, go ahead for our entertainment purposes only. I think the Jets win their opener at home and silence the papers for at least a week there. Give me the Jets minus 3.
Our third rookie quarterback comes up in the fourth game here. New Orleans laying 7 to Washington. Man, it's going to be crazy in New Orleans. I don't care who's coaching them. The Skins are a better team maybe than people give them credit for, but RG3 going in there week one, I'm happy to lay 7. Yours, I'll take the Saints.
Yeah, well, we're not going to be different on this one either there. I'm seeing 7.5. If I can get 7, boy, I would really, really love that. But if 7.5 is the number you're making me pick with here, I'm still all over that. That place is loud, loud, loud for a rookie to make his first start at. So, yeah, give me the Saints minus the number.
Okay, next game, the Pats on the road against Tennessee. Jake Locker, a second-year quarterback, making a start at home. Not his first start, but he gets the nod this year. Very athletic guy. I'm sure Bill Belichick will be scheming him. Vegas obviously not exactly sure what to do with this game. It comes in at 5.5. They know the Patriots are going to be heavy bettors. The people are going to love the Patriots here in week one. I'm going to go the other way and take Tennessee.
There's something strange about this line, isn't there? I mean,
Exactly what I said.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. There's something strange about this. That being said, can I lay, what are you showing? 5.5. I'll lay that 5.5 right now. I mean, something's up here. Somebody knows something somewhere, but regardless, I got to take the Patriots lay to 5.5.
Yeah, it looked like somebody knew something about Pitt Cincinnati last night, and it turned out they didn't know much all right, so we got one different there. Minnesota is home, and we've got two young quarterbacks taken both last in the previous draft, 2011, in Christian Ponder and Blaine Gabbert. Neither of these guys overly impressed. I think Ponder a little bit more than Gabbert last year. I've heard rumors that Gabbert's looked good in the preseason. He's got MJD back in the fold. Justin Blackmon looks like he's going to be a go, although he's had some injury issues here in leading into week one. He's also had some lifestyle issues leading into his life. But I'm going to go the home team. I think Adrian Peterson, who's been kind of my barometer for Rashard Mendenhall's comeback, he's fully said he's going to be ready for week one. He's been practicing. Sounds like he's going to go. So I'm going to lay the 3.5 with Minnesota over Jacksonville.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about this game. But, Minnesota at home, they're not going to win many games this year, but this should be one of them. So give me Minnesota, lay the wood.
Okay, top line of the week, another 1 o'clock game. We've got a boat full of 1 o'clock games. Of course, no buys in week one. Houston at home against Miami. Ryan Tannehill going back to Texas where he went to college, at Texas A&M. Houston laying 11.5. As long as it's under 13, Dave, I'm laying it. Ryan Tannehill may be fine someday. I have my doubts about that. He ain't going to be fine in week one. They're going to get smoked.
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of sacks in this game. A lot of turnovers, I believe, as well, too. Miami's just bad, man. They are bad. I'm with you. Unless it's two touchdowns, I'm laying it.
Okay, Detroit at home against St. Louis. This is a game a lot of people like. St. Louis starting Sam Bradford. He's now kind of the sheen is off a little bit off of him these days. He hasn't had great receivers to throw to. This team hasn't won any games while he's been there. He needs to start turning things around. He's not going to turn them around in this game. And kind of the other guy who people think about when they think of Sam Bradford is Matt Stafford. He's on the other side. He's got all the weapons. They're at home laying 7.5. Again, I don't see it. I think Detroit's a decent team. They're up and down. People are worried about their emotional psyche and whether they lose their minds. But I'll lay the 7.5.
I'm going to go the other. I'm going to go the other way. I think Detroit wins this game. I think it's a high scoring game too. Thinking about taking the over in this one as well too, 45.5. But I think both teams will be able to move the ball well on each other. Detroit, in my opinion, has secondary issues. Give me the Rams plus the, what are you showing, 7.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, give me the Rams plus the points, but Detroit wins this outright.
The start of the Jeff Fisher era. This may be one of the more interesting games on the board, is Kansas City hosting Atlanta. And I think I've got my view of these two teams, and I think they're mixed views of these teams. I'm higher on Kansas City than most people and lower on Atlanta than most people. But Julio Jones, I guess, has been killing it in the preseason. So maybe that's what makes Matt Ryan take the step forward. But I'm going to take the points with Kansas City at home. I'm going to take the 2.5.
Wow, I'm easily laying that. You know, you've got a vendetta against Atlanta or something.
Yeah, I hate him.
Were you ever mugged or something in the underground there or something? Or, but no, seriously, Julio Jones has been a beast. I know this is on the road. I know that place is loud. you know, Arrowhead and all like that. But still, just too many weapons, in my opinion. Give me Atlanta and lay the, what, 2.5?
2.5.
Yeah. Give it to me.
All right. The start of the 4:25 games, new kickoff for the late games in the NFL, San Francisco and Green Bay. What do you think? Green Bay's at home laying 5.
You know what? I can't get a good read on this game, but being as how Green Bay is at home, you know, it's hard to go against that. You know, San Francisco's got some question marks on offense still, in my opinion. There, they signed about 17 wide receivers this past offseason, but I don't think any of it's shaken out just yet. From what I've seen that I like. So give me Green Bay later points.
I'm with you. What do you think of Carolina and Tampa? Carolina going into Tampa as a 2.5-point favorite.
I like the Panthers, and I like to lay this.
I do, too. I mean, Cam Newton is so – Cam Newton's ceiling is so high. He improved. I think they've helped him a little bit at wide receiver. They got a bevy of running backs, depending on who's healthy. You know, a lot of people like Greg Schiano coming in there, but this Tampa team, they got to show me something once before I take them. No, I'd rather not take them – go against them as a home dog, but – you know, they rolled over for 10 games last year and cost Raheem Morris his job. So I want to see it before I get on him. I'm not sold on who's their big quarterback.
Freeman.
Yeah, Josh Freeman. I'm not in love with Josh Freeman. I am in love with Cam Newton, so I'll take the quarterback. So I'll take Carolina as well. The other 4:25 game is Seattle goes on the road to Arizona. Seattle's a 3-point favorite. Again, this is a really intriguing matchup. I'm going to enjoy watching this one when I get to see it. Russell Wilson, the quarterback for Seattle. Looks like John Skelton will open up for Arizona, but he may have a short leash. Who do you like?
Oh, this is a tough one, man. And this is one I won't be betting. But
Me neither.
Seattle, you know, give me the Cardinals at home just because they're at home. So give me the 3 points at home.
All right, I'll take the other side so we get a couple games opposite each other. I'll root for Russell Wilson. The Monday night games, we have a great game, 7:00. This will be, you know, two really good games, and for Steeler fans, really fun game to watch to start the Monday night season. 7:00, Cincinnati goes to Baltimore. Baltimore laying 6. Looks like Baltimore's going to run this no huddle a lot this year. I think we all know that everybody has a view on Joe Flacco, and I don't think Joe Flacco's quite Tony Romo yet, but, you know, I'd probably disparage him a tad more than I should. He's a good NFL quarterback. I think he's a better quarterback than Andy Dalton, and I'll take the home edge here, and I like it being under 7, so I think it's about a 7-point game, so I'll take Baltimore laying 6.
If I can get 7, I would like to take the Bengals in this game. Can I have the 6.5 at least?
No.
I could get 6.5 right now, you know, through my book, but
so I'm seeing 6.
All right. Give
you
me
6.5. Oh, okay, we'll go. We got separate bet here, Alan. If I'm laying 6 and he's taking 6.5.
Just to make it even, to make it fair, give me Cincinnati plus the 6. I think they can hang with this. I think Baltimore wins this game on a field goal, but I think Cincinnati can hang with them in this game. So give me Cincinnati plus the 6 points.
All right, San Diego, Oakland. San Diego goes on the road as a 1-point dog. I'll take them. I think that, you know, they haven't had a good September, October, and, you know, in my lifetime, it seems like. So I'll say they started here.
Yeah, give me them. How the hell is Oakland favored in this game? I just don't understand that. I mean, I know Ronnie Brown will probably have to start for San Diego at running back there, but regardless, boy, if San Diego loses this game, man, the Norv Turner, boy, they're going to be on him already. But give me San Diego plus the point.
Yeah, all right, Dave. Dun, 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 dun. Here we are, Sunday, and I'll just promo that I am going to be doing a Steeler pregame show. It's a pregame show. I will be on the air on 970 from 4 to 6, 4 to 6 p.m. I'm going to be at some bar in Dormont. I'm going to find out where that bar is before I get there, and I'll be on the air 4 to 6 doing the pregame. Hopefully, I'll have some information, late breaking information. But you're going to hear it first. You're going to hear it first from me. So if you want to get involved. 4 to 6, you can hear me on 970 for the start of Steeler coverage after the 1:00 games are over. So, Dave, here we go. Sunday night, Pittsburgh at Denver. I think in our whole time here, you have gone against the Steelers zero times to win games. You may have gone against them. I'm not even sure against the line you've gone against them, so I'm going to let you lead off here.
I have gone against them in the past. It's not very often, but, and people are going to say I'm a hater. I don't believe in the Steelers this year, blah, blah, blah. Look, the Steelers lost to Baltimore last year in the opener. They still had a fantastic season. You can't wear your homer glasses all the time. You got to look at this from an angle that you just observe and break things down. That being said, what line are you showing on here?
One and a half.
I like Denver to cover this, man. I hate to say it. I think they kick a field goal here with just about 15, 20 seconds left in the clock to take the lead there. So unfortunately, I hope I'm 130% wrong, but I think Denver wins this game, and I'm going to say 24-22 Denver.
I've thought long and hard about this, and one of the things that has surprised me is to see the whole world is on Denver here. They think Peyton coming in there is going to win it. I think we haven't seen enough of whether Peyton's connection with his receivers as it was of old with the guys in Indy. I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to run the ball effectively. I'm going to take the Steelers here, and I think the Steelers are going to win this game 24-17, and I like it. I really thought during the course of the week that I might end up taking the Broncos, but I think I'm going to go Steelers 24-17, and we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong.
All right, fair enough. Dave, okay, anything, our first Friday of the regular season, a good hour podcast for our listeners. Hopefully you enjoyed that, and anything you want to wrap up with?
No, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. He changed his Twitter handle, so please make a note of that. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll get into some emails hopefully next week there, time permitting there. We got another donation in last night. We appreciate that.
And we're going to start hitting you up hard next week. A good solid week. It's going to be like the Jerry Lewis telethon. We're going to go hard. We're going to lead the show with the donation stuff next week, particularly if we miss all our picks this week.
yeah, exactly. But we only do that for entertainment purposes only, mind you, both of us. So we'll leave it at that. David, you want to take us out of here?
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.